Katie, can I rant about something really quick?
I don't think I can say no, so sure.
you could I don't know. We never plan this. Like, we do not plan any of this. Like, I promise people, I really like the cold open in spirit, so we never plan cold opens. We do not. I thought of this literally 5 seconds, like, as you were counting us in to start. So if you have something that you
oh, no,
really
I got shit.
Want to
go for it, man.
So it's a rant slash, you know, it's a dichotomy, if you will, a dichotomy in animation.
Okay.
The kids these days, they like the animes and the mangas.
I mean, that was popular when we were kids, though.
It is, but I really feel like it's reached new heights of mainstream.
Okay, that's fair, yeah.
ergo, you know, example A, the Demon Slayer movie just came out last weekend. I guess as we're recording this, probably it'll be 2 weekends ago by the time this is out. Broke the record for foreign language U.S. box office opening day or opening weekend. Insanely popular. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure, just based on those, and it also was not getting a wide release. It was like very few screens, and it still broke the record. It almost beat Mortal Kombat in the box office.
Wow.
So I'm sure that as people are listening to this, we probably have some Demon Slayer fans out there. I am, in fact, one of them now.
Oh.
My girlfriend got into it, and she said we should watch this. And you know, my girlfriend is guilty of getting me to watch Food Wars. So anyone who's not familiar with Food Wars, it's the show where kids in high school make food and give it to their teachers, whose clothes immediately blow off of their bodies because of how good the food tastes. It's very strange. It's a good show.
I remember talking about this and having the same questions, and I know you answered them for me, and I completely forgot.
It's a really sweet show about growing up and cooking as an art form and blah, blah,
and
blah.
And teachers taking their clothes off, you know?
Yeah, sure. So my girlfriend says, let's watch Demon Slayer, and my first reaction is, what is it, fucking titty demons fighting big dick demons? And what, like, you know, I'm very skeptical of the show. But I end up watching it. And in the first 5 minutes, I was in love with the protagonist. I think Tanjiro, who is the main character, he is such a classic hero. I mean, they open the first episode with like an almost saccharine level scene of him going through his town, and like he helps everybody. Everybody in the town knows him. He's a good kid. Like, he just helps everybody. He has the purest heart you've ever seen. And he makes for a great protagonist. He makes for a great hero. And they do a lot of really classical things from an archetypal heroic story. You know, it's got a lot of violence, and it's got crazy action, and it's got ridiculous over-the-top anime shit, but there's a real solid heart to this show. Like, he is such a good kid that it's almost like you're taken aback by like how good-hearted he is.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're, you know, if you're like 19 years old and you're cynical, you sit there and you go like, oh, that's not realistic because nobody's really that good and whatever. But when you're 31 years old and you're running out of hope, a 14-year-old kid in an anime, you know, it's like a 14-year-old kid, a 14-year-old kid in an anime who has the purest heart you've ever seen is like inspiring. Like, it reminds you of that part of you that used to believe in goodness like that. And it's fucking astounding how taken I was with the show. And like, all, you know, Inosuke and Zenitsu and like his friends and his sister and like all these other characters, like, they all have different quirks and aspects to them, but they all have really good hearts. And it's kind of refreshing to see a show like that. I absolutely love Demon Slayer. I could go on and on about it for an hour, but I said I wanted to do a comparison really quickly here. So there is another show that my girlfriend and I have actually just finished watching, season one. That is an Amazon original streaming show from Robert Kirkman. It's based on a comic book by Robert Kirkman, who is the creator of The Walking Dead comic book and TV show. It is called Invincible. Star-studded cast of voice actors from America mainly, and big, big cast, big stars, all that stuff. And it fucking sucks. In my opinion, this show it has some redeeming values, it has some redeeming qualities, but there are two things that I noticed right away. Number one, we can't do animation for crap. And when I say we, I mean Americans, whatever, Western. I know they had some people, you know, they tried to bring in some big name studios from Japan and Korea to kind of help with the animation, but you can just tell that they did that for the name recognition. Like, going from watching one of the most popular animes to going to watch a supposedly big budget American animation show It's like, it sounds ridiculous and hyperbolic to say my eyes hurt, but like, it looks so bad compared to anime. And then when you look at the character, like, the main characters in Invincible, it's all this fucking, it's all subversion in air quotes. It's all like, well, you think a hero is this, but really, heroes are stupid. And like, it's just so played out at this point. Like, that was an original idea in 2007. we've had a decade of this shit of like, everything you think is good, it's really not. And fucking bad guys are cool. And like, that's so old at this point. Like, that's not original anymore. And it was never inspiring, and it was never really compelling. It's just sort of the thing that you thought was cool when you were a teenager, because like, ooh, fuck the man or whatever. But I watch this show and I go, it thinks it's being so original. It thinks it's being so subversive and like unique and interesting. And this dopey fucking anime show, which, don't get me wrong, Demon Slayer has some of the same flaws that anime always has, which is like,
everyone's at 14.
Well, like, there's that. Everything's super on the nose. Like, it's not very subtle, but it ultimately, it ends up being more compelling, even though it's not that surprising. It doesn't try and subvert your expectations. Like, it plays into the expectation of what a hero should be, and yet it's just more watchable. It's more enjoyable to see a show that is just trying to show you something that it earnestly believes is valuable and a good message, versus a show that's like constantly trying to be smarter than you by like pulling the rug out from underneath you. And it can't even do that because you see all of the supposed subversive elements coming a mile away. That's just my rant on it. I've been going on for like 7 minutes now, and people probably want to hear the actual topic, but I'm just amazed that level of distinction exists in animation right now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't really know what to add to that, because like I like animation. It's something I've kind of like passively been into, and like there's really not. Obviously, there are like Western animations that are good. Like one that was critically acclaimed. Recently, Steven Universe was, I like, that was kind of everyone's like, oh, it's uplifting and it's all goodness and blah blah blah. I haven't watched the show, I can't really add to it, but yeah. I think there's a reason why Japan, like, anime is so popular, is because there's just so much of it. There's such a breadth of, you know, what you want to choose from. So like, whatever story you're looking for, like, if you do like those overplayed 2007 stories of everything's wrong and you don't know, like, I'm sure there's an anime with that too.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
But I mean, the only good anime is actually Sailor Moon, so like, you know what, it's-
I mean, there's a whole episode about that in the Split the Veil catalog if you want to go back and listen to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's why it's the best one. I don't know how to transition from what we're doing today. So
I mean, animes have villains. We're talking about villains.
Yeah, that's that was a transition. It happened
technically.
So Jordan and I were talking, like, well, we kind of want to do something with Mass Effect adjacent, because the Legendary Edition when this episode comes out, it'll be like a week from it coming
out,
right? Yeah. So this is kind of the last episode before it actually airs. So we decided, at one point, we did a protagonist battle where we talked about all the BioWare protagonists and we bashed them together and talked out why we thought, I think Shepard won in the end, wasn't it?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, as much as it hurt my heart. So now we're going to do the same thing with the antagonists, the villains. So real quick, just to like, what we wrote down, we wanted to do like the main villainous force in each of the Mass Effect and Dragon Age series, to which our list is Loghain, the Archdemon, Saren and the Geth, Arishok, Meredith, the Collectors, the Elusive Man, Corypheus, the Reapers, and the Ket, but I think we've both come to the conclusion that the Ket's not winning, so we're just going to say...
The Ket, right? Like, right now, the Ket is like the... I know you don't follow college basketball, but for anybody who does, like, the Ket right now in this bracket is like the 16 seed that always goes up against Duke in the first game, and it's like, well, you're going to lose by 60 points, but congratulations for being here.
Yeah, I don't get that at all, but I appreciate that someone who's into sports is is getting a good giggle. But yeah, so I guess like we kind of wanted to compare them per game, but like there's no like Dragon Age equivalent to Andromeda. So I like just to talk about the Ket real quick and why they're not going to win.
They're not good.
They're just not. Like, they try to do this thing where, like, the Ket were actually the Angaran the whole time, and he was fighting his people, but they were twisted, and blah, blah, blah. And it, like, just didn't land very well to me. Because it's kind of like, well, they're not really your people anymore. They're, like, twisted. It's like saying, like, Darkspawn are human. Like, not really. They're dead. They're corpses.
There are some good things about the Ket and about the Archon in particular, but the problem that I've always had with it is that the original lead writer who was hired to work on Andromeda's story first also happened to be the lead writer for a little game called Halo 4, the first Halo game not developed by Bungie, done by 343 Studios, and the Archon is basically the same bad guy as Halo 4.
Well, there you go. So the Halo 4 villains...
Right, and I've never got that. It's a decent idea of like genetic, you know, taking other creatures' genetic material and like trying to blah blah blah, but it just felt so much like that villain. I was like, oh, it's the same, this guy just used the same thing.
Well, I mean, to his credit, like I feel like the people who played Halo 4 and the people who play Mass Effect Andromeda are kind of, they're two circles. There's not very many of you guys that overlap there.
Oh, you might be right. I don't know what that Venn diagram looks like, but
probably it's like the overlap is just, it's like you and like five other people.
yeah, that might be true.
So I guess he almost got away with it. Thanks for you know, bringing that back. Okay, well, let's actually get to the first round, which we're going to do. Let's do the first one: Dragon Age Origins versus Mass Effect 1. So Loghain the Archdemon versus Saren and the Geth. Are we going to do like a lawyer system where I'm going to talk about Dragon Age and how cool it is and you do Mass Effect? And is that what we're going to
do? We can do that. I can cross-examine yours. You can cross-examine mine.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good idea.
Do you want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
Mass Effect released first, so I'll go first.
Go for it.
Okay, so here's the question right off the bat.
All right.
Are we judging them strictly based on how they are in the games? Because if we talk about books, both Loghain and Saren have a lot more material. And it's, in my opinion, their best material.
Oh, that's a good question. I think historically we've tried not to use the books, so let's not use the books.
Oh, God damn it.
I know. That hurts my Loghain. So we're at least on even playing field.
Yeah, you're right, because it takes a lot away from Loghain, but it takes a lot away from Saren also.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. I would still say, okay, even not talking about what's in the books, I mean, I like Saren because Saren is a fallen good guy. He's a specter who's supposed to be the epitome of like justice and law. Mm-hmm. And he really is like that archetype of someone who starts off just taking law and order too far. Mm-hmm. He punishes people too harshly. And then eventually he becomes obsessed with, you know, ultimately the reason why he sides with the Geth / Reapers is because he thinks that he's going to save everyone that way. He thinks that he can actually save organics by proving that they're useful to the Reapers, which is a completely and totally flawed way of thinking. But that's his sort of angle in. And I do think that the game could do a better job of communicating that. It kind of doesn't do that until close to the very end. And Saren, you know, Saren does kind of fall into the trap of being a somewhat absent villain.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that all of his scenes in Mass Effect are very good. They're very compelling. Again, we're not talking about the books, but goddamn, if we got into his scenes there, that would really drive it home. But in the game, I would say he's good, but he falls prey to the BioWare trap of absent antagonist in many ways. Mm-hmm. And the Geth kind of end up stepping into the role of the more present, like you feel the presence of the Geth because you're fighting them constantly. But the problem with the Geth is they do end up feeling mysterious and kind of unknowable a little bit in Mass Effect 1, but that's also because they're just generally not expounded upon. Most of the interesting stuff about the Geth happens in 2 and 3 when they stop being purely antagonists and they start sort of being more gray area, like, well, we thought these were the bad guys from 1, but it turns out they're kind of sympathetic in another sense. So,
So here's the problem. Now that I'm thinking about it, at least for Mass Effect 1 and Dragon Age Origins, the villains are, like, kind of the same.
They're very similar. No, I mean, like, they're very similar.
Yeah, because Loghain, well, he was the, like, literally a Ferelden hero, and everyone looked up to him, and that's kind of, like, why people are like, oh, why did he's not evil, he's our hero, which is, like, exactly what Saren was. And, like, I would say, like, Loghain is less evil than Saren in that regard, because, like, Loghain honestly thinks, I guess Saren's doing the same thing, but, like, Loghain's, I guess, only, well, he did sell people to Devinter, so okay, there's that, I understand. But, like, his one flaw was that he just didn't believe the Blight was real, and it was really just a threat. So instead of, like, Saren did something evil, if you will, Loghain just didn't want to do anything and, like, was just curmudgeon-y about it. Does that make sense? So, like, he didn't want to help the Grey Wardens. He didn't want to have a giant fight. So I guess he tried to throw a coup so that way he can be the one to control it and, like, kind of bunker down with the rest of Ferelden and say, no, this is my land. Get out. You know, Orlesian Grey Warden's bad. And then the Archdemon is kind of like the Geth, where, like, you do end up fighting, like, more of the Darkspawn. And, like, you really are thinking about the Archdemon at one point. You go to Lansome and you go, oh, fuck, that Loghain guy, right? Crap. And then you fight him, and then you actually go on to the Archdemon, which kind of sounds like a lot like Saren and the Geth. I don't know how. So here's a good question. What are we looking for? Are we looking for, like, the most evil, or are we looking for the most interesting?
Such a great question, because, once again, we don't actually plan these things out very much, so now we get to talk about our criteria on air, which is good, because I think that helps people understand what this episode's all about, which is what does make a good villain. I will say that I don't think it should be most evil. I know if we were doing, like, a more fandom style ranking, we would probably say who's most effective in their goal, but I don't buy that. I think we should really just stick to, look, BioWare games are about stories, and an antagonist in a story, to me, is very good when they do challenge the heroes, but more than that, when they challenge the reader or the audience to really think through the dichotomy between good and evil. So essentially, it's a villain who has, kind of like the two that we're talking about, who almost has an angle that makes you think that they make sense on some level. And yes. And someone who is just, we say interesting, or you can use the word compelling, just a villain that makes you want to sit and think about them.
Yeah. So I think in that regard, we should probably just, I think we're just looking for the top answer, and I think the rest of the ranking doesn't matter. So I would just go ahead and cross off Archdemon and the Geth, because in that regard, Loghain and Saren are much more compelling than the other two. Because they're really just kind of big bads, pure little balls of evil. And, like, the Geth do get more interesting later on in the series. But, like, the Archdemon is just, it's, like, literally evil. There's nothing compelling about it. It's just the big obstacle in your way. And it's really the only catalyst to, like, make Loghain go nuts, if you will. You know, like, Loghain probably would have died a hero were it not for the Blight.
I do think I'm ultimately going to agree with you. In fact, I do agree with you. But just so we don't overpass them too quickly, I do want to say at least this about the Geth. And I don't know if it's true about the Darkspawn. The Geth do have a motivation that is not necessarily black and white, or not necessarily cookie cutter. We don't see much of it in Mass Effect 1. Most of it we don't see explained until 2 and 3. But there are scenes in Mass Effect 1 where you see the Geth worshipping Reapers. And we do know that they're following the Reapers. You know, we know that they were essentially, you know, the Quarians tried to destroy them as soon as they realized that they were sentient. They disappeared behind the Perseus Veil, and now they're back and they're worshiping the Reapers. So you can kind of extrapolate that, like, they're worshiping these sentient machines even more powerful than them. Because they want their freedom, because they want to be treated as equals. I still agree with you. There's not enough there to really make that argument. But just kind of wanted to mention that there were the breadcrumbs there.
Okay, I'll give you that. So if we were ranking this, we would put the Geth above the Archdemon, and that not to say, like, the Archdemon is there cool Archdemon lore. Yes. Is it really played out in Origins and the storyline? Not really.
We learn so much more about the old gods and stuff in Inquisition.
Yeah, honestly, with Corypheus and whatnot, which we'll, I guess, get to there. So yeah, now it's really just about Loghain versus Saren, which is kind of rough because they're kind of the same character. And it's really just what flavor of this do you want?
You did say something that I thought was interesting, and I do agree with you, that Loghain is more sympathetic than Saren, and I think he's kind of more good than Saren, even though they're both villains, and here's specifically why. There is no... Well, a couple of reasons why. Saren and the Geth are the dual antagonists of one, because they are essentially working together. They're both beholden. They're both agents of the Reaper. It's not like Loghain is working with the Darkspawn. Mm-hmm. He's sort of using the chaos of that to further his own aims to a certain extent. And he is power hungry, but he's not actually like shaking hands with evil. Saren is working with the Reapers, even though he's partially indoctrinated, so he's brain controlled. At least at the beginning, he thought that he could work with the Reapers in some way, or maybe he thought he was going to control the Reapers. And the second thing is that if you try to get through to Saren, the most you can do is get him to the point where he realizes he's indoctrinated and he kills himself. Mm-hmm. There's no version in Mass Effect where Saren helps you kill Sovereign. Loghain can actually kill the Archdemon and sacrifice himself for Ferelden.
That's true. So does that knock him out because he could technically become the hero again?
No, because he's still a major antagonist. I mean, I'm a crappy lawyer at this point if my job is supposed to be arguing for Mass Effect, but I mean, this is like a classic split the veil concept where we're basically arguing towards the middle. I kind of like Loghain. As much as I love Saren, I'm going to say I favor Loghain in this instance.
Okay.
I put Loghain one for the first round.
All right. We'll cross off Saren, and Loghain continues on. All right. So let's move on to the second installation. So that's Arishok, Meredith, the Collectors, and the Elusive Man. I guess you went first last time, so I'll go first now. I think there's also probably an argument out there. People want to argue about that weird Titan monster thing in the first act of the game, but that's not. It doesn't. No one gives a shit about that. So that's why we're only doing Arishok and Meredith.
Yeah, it makes sense.
The Arishok, like, okay, in Dragon Age 2. Me personally, I actually think Arishok is much more intimidating than Meredith. In presence, because he's just like, he was sitting there bored out of his mind. And then one day he just got so pissed off, he decided to destroy a city and did it pretty well, honestly. Mm-hmm. When Meredith needed magical abilities to be able to, fuck up Kirkwall, Arishok just needed like a good reason. And he yeah. found one day.
Yeah.
That and like legitimately, I think the Arishok fight is harder than Meredith's boss fight. On the other side, I do love Meredith, and Meredith's boss fight is probably my favorite in the entire Dragon Age series, just because it's so wacky.
Wow.
It's just so crazy. Like, statues are coming to life. But story-wise, like, I will say, as much as I like Meredith, a lot of her, like, interesting stuff kind of comes from like extra material thrown in, like the world of Thedas and whatnot, and you kind of see her side of the story. And like I don't think they did her as well, because you just the third act where you really got to know her was kind of rushed. So like, I know I'm doing a terrible job lawyering here, but I think I'm trying to just prop up the Arishok as the ultimate villain. My child is going absolutely nuts in the background. I was just picking up on the mic, but she's just yelling her little heart out.
I couldn't hear it, but she wants to get in on the conversation.
Yeah, she really wants to let you know that the Arishok is the cool. Or maybe she's arguing for Meredith. I don't know. But like, while Meredith is technically the ultimate villain, like the only reason she kind of went, I mean, like there was a Red Lyrium, but the only reason she kind of went nuclear was because Anders blew up the Chantry, and it just kind of all exploded off of that. We don't know what would have happened if Anders hadn't done that. Like, she probably would have gotten more angry, and like something eventually would have happened thanks to Red Lyrium. But Arishok, I think, like, we always knew he was going to destroy Kirkwall. He just didn't know when. So The problem is, though, it's like him as a person really isn't that compelling, like Loghain or Saren. It's just like him and the Kune as a concept of this is just a figure that believes he is in the right. Everything he does is right. And he is just looking for, in his perspective, a morally just reason to convert you. And that's scary. And that's it's almost kind of like the Reapers, but with a human face on it. Yeah, I guess that's my piece. I would say Aroshock over Meredith, even though I do love Meredith a lot.
So I love the Aroshock. So remind me to come back so we can talk about how much I love the Aroshock, but let me go ahead and give us the Mass Effect 2 opening statement.
Okay.
I think that the Elusive Man is one of the best antagonists I've ever encountered in any media, in any game, anything. I think the Elusive Man is utterly fantastic. I think part of that is because there's some star power that actually delivers. As far as Martin Sheen doing the voice, it gives gravitas and weight and fucking smoothness, and like the original concept art all the way through to execution of him sitting with the star behind him in the chair, sort of lazily holding the cigarette and the fucking, you know,
it's iconic.
That is the exact term. It is iconic. And then that voice comes out of him and you're just like, oh shit, we're dealing with this is it. This is the dark number two entry in the sequel. And so much of Mass Effect 2's aesthetic really hinges on whether or not the Elusive Man works. So as much as I don't want to overhype the aesthetic aspect of it, aesthetics matter. It's part of what makes him compelling. It's part of what makes you sit up and move to the edge of your seat the first time you see him, because he's talking in this way where you're just like, wait a minute, I'm pretty sure based on what I know about Mass Effect 1, Cerberus are the bad guys, but like, at the very least, this guy seems competent and he says he wants to save human colonies. Like, I don't trust this guy, but I don't disagree with the fact that if this is happening and he just brought Shepard back from the dead and he's giving us the Normandy back and all this other shit, like, I guess we should be working with him. And that's a really powerful thing for them to have done from a storytelling standpoint. I would argue that you would not want to set up the story in such a way where the player feels totally comfortable working with Cerberus, but you also wouldn't want to set up the story in such a way where some RPGs especially, like, they will put you into a situation where you don't have a choice, you have to go down a certain path, and it sucks. You feel like your character is breaking what they would do, like they have to drag you kicking and screaming, and that can ruin an experience in an RPG. Mass Effect 2 is a very tough bill, because you want the player to feel hesitant, but you don't want them to feel so against Cerberus and the Elusive Man that it feels like they're being dragged kicking and screaming down that path, because you have to work with Cerberus no matter what. You want them to feel like Shepard feels. I don't trust you, but it does make sense that I work with you for the time being. They nailed that, and all of that is really because of the Elusive Man. So and there's so much more about his entire arc throughout Mass Effect 2, but I think the Elusive Man is like peak villain. I think he's some of the best antagonists I've ever seen.
Yeah, here's the problem with this whole lineup is that I think the Elusive Man is much cooler than Aroshock and Meredith combined, maybe. So, like, I can't argue. What am I supposed to say? Meredith turns into a statue, like. Aroshock got some horns.
The Elusive Man represents all of the potential pitfalls of pride in your species, but fucking Meredith turns into statues.
It's fucking rad! You know, like, what can I say? Like, I got nothing.
I will say this, though. The Collectors, I don't know, are they at the bottom of the entire Mass Effect lineup of antagonists? Probably.
No, there's the cat.
Well, other than the cat, you're right. They're better than the cat for what that's worth.
Because, like, I was scared of the Collectors. I wasn't really scared of the cat.
Yeah, you're right. So before the cat came along, though, original trilogy, I would say I'd rank the Collectors last, because they are scary. Again, we're not including books. I thought that the way that they were set up and the way that they were sort of referenced and alluded to was scarier in the books. Once I saw them in the game, I'm like, oh, they look kind of like beetle people. They weren't quite as scary to me, although they were challenging, assuming direct control and whatever. Every time you heard that fucking assuming direct control, you're like, oh shit, get all my abilities ready. But I wasn't particularly intimidated by them, and if you can talk about them and the stories that people about them in a book, they seem very ominous and sort of in the shadows. once they start popping up in trash mobs and action beats every 15 minutes, even if they're challenging in combat, they're not really mysterious anymore. So,
well, it's kind of like that horror movie concept where, like, the less you show your monster, the better it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because then when you show the monster, then you're like, oh, it looks kind of wonky or certainly that's scary, or, like, you can see the rubber. You know, it's kind of like that in the video game form. Because, like, I remember, like, the very first time you're watching I think it's Ashley Orcaden, but Ashley's Colony or whatever, and, like, you see the colony get attacked and, like, the swarms of things. You're like, holy shit, that's horrifying.
That's the best part.
And then, like, yeah, like, that's what the collector's best part is. It's just, like, that kind of ominous, you don't know what's going on. But when you kind of figure out what's going on and you go and defeat them, it's like,
No, you're right. That's actually a really good point to bring up. They were scary up to that point, because that's when you actually saw what was referenced in the books taking place in real life. You're like, oh shit, this is how they do it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there are moments of it. I guess also too, if you're behind, if you don't go and save Chakwas and the crew right away, you see members of the crew getting liquefied. That's a choice-based one, though, so I'm like, that really shouldn't happen unless you went and dicked around and did 5 side missions after everybody got
killed. People do it, though.
Some people did, yeah. They didn't realize it was actually timed and it was actually going to affect things.
Yeah.
Well,
I guess for this round, we're going Collector's Last, and then I would say Meredith, and then Aroshock, and then obviously Elusive Man at the top. But did you have an opinion on Aroshock versus Meredith?
I completely agree with your ranking there. That's exactly the order I would put it in. The thing I just want to say about Aroshock, even though I would still put Elusive Man higher, I think the Aroshock, especially, you know, over the years that I've kind of re-seen, you know, re-experienced the story, I think the Aroshock is my favorite thing thematically about Dragon Age 2.
It's my favorite thing about Mass Effect.
Oh, shit. If the Aroshock was in Mass Effect 2, goddamn, that'd be insane.
Oh, God.
No, I think that the Aroshock is my favorite thing thematically about Dragon Age 2. The real heart of the theme in Dragon Age 2 is mages versus Templars, right? It's essentially the X-Men theme. People are born with these fantastical abilities. They are dangerous, but how much freedom do they deserve? Yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why I love the Aroshock and the Kune being interjected into that is because that type of fucking gray area and moral ambiguity, fuck that shit in the Kune, right? We know what we do with mages. You can be horrified and object to what they do with mages, but his certainty and the fact that he does not have any doubts about his society's way of doing business or sort of way of life, that's disturbing, particularly in a setting like Kirkwall, because Kirkwall is chaos. Kirkwall is being torn apart at the seams. You should be able to say to someone who is totalitarian like that, who comes from a totalitarian background, you're taking away people's freedom too much. You can't really believe that's the right way to do it. Like, that's blah, blah, blah. And when he can turn around and say exactly what he says in Dragon Age 2, look at this chaos. You think this is better? And he makes you feel like, oh, crap, he kind of has a point. It's not that he really has a point. It's that Kirkwall needs to get their shit together. But throwing a character like the Aroshock into a chaotic situation like Kirkwall, especially with that voice, again, to talk about the aesthetic, the lazy posture on the throne, like you said, it's so matter. He's so domineering and so matter of fact and so sure of himself that he has this air of confidence where you look at his certainty and the order he wants to impose, even though you know it's taking it too far, and it makes you doubt a little bit whether or not freedom has actually been terrible for Kirkwall. I fucking love the Aroshock in 2.
But unfortunately, he does not make it into the finals. So, Elusive Man goes on.
He does.
I don't know why, but I'm making note of who, like, in their little rankings, you know, Aroshock is number 2.
To borrow my college basketball, well, not the official NCAA, but, like, in basketball tournaments, you could have, like, the lower bracket, the quote-unquote loser's bracket.
Well, look at me making notes and it actually making sense. Woohoo! okay, well, let's go on to the third game, which I think, unfortunately, might also go to Mass Effect. But Corypheus and the Reapers and the Elusive Man. There's less to say on Corypheus, so I'll just start with him, even though unless you want to go first.
No, kick it off with Corypheus.
Corypheus is both a very good and a horrible villain for the game. He had so much potential And you can actually see some of it in game. The problem is, though, it is so hidden. Like, if you don't side with the Templars, you'll never hear his side of the story of, like, you know, him waking up and, like, him thinking or whatever from Calpurnia's quest. You'll never hear that. It's just gone. If you don't make sure you read Codex entries, you won't hear, like, there's one that is in, like, the Nightmare Demon's realm by a, what's it called, like, something of Dumat's, Table of Dumat's, I don't know. But it's essentially a note from his slave noting how his Corypheus kind of broke into the Fade and him like being worried about his family, or the slave being worried about his family. Corypheus apparently didn't give a shit. But Corypheus did have a family. He had a wife and kids and all that stuff. And you kind of, you know, this idea, and like his like the first time you meet him, you're like, holy fuck, this is insane. Like, he is a man who broke, like, this thing of legend. He broke into the Golden City and like brought the blight into the world, and he's saying things are actually different, like the throne was empty, like his, that, like, the first time you meet him in Inquisition, I know he was in two, but we're not gonna care, but in Inquisition, it is so, it is so compelling, and like that, like him coming out of the flames and the fire with this dragon, and you like, I know they try to do a switcheroo where it's like, oh, it's an archdemon, but it's not. I never thought it was an archdemon, but anyway, but yeah, it was just so intense. And then that, like, what, that's like, I guess depending on how you play, that could be like 20 hours into like a 100-hour game or whatever. That is his coolest moment, and then everything is downhill from there. From there on, he is just like Three Stooges level of incompetent, you know, like nothing goes right for him. So like, he had this really cool, like, amazing startup, and then it didn't. You're just constantly shitting on him the rest of Inquisition, and like, you do not feel, by the time you actually fight him at the end, like, and he says some really interesting lore implication things to, like, your Inquisitor, depending on your race and whatnot. It, like, not only are you probably overpowered to just whoop his ass, and that there is a very, like, common glitch where if you accidentally knock him off, he auto, like, right, kills himself. That's right. It just doesn't work. Gameplay and story wise, because like, you just, it's like that one image of like from The Simpsons of like, stop, he's already dead. Like, it's just, you're beating him.
Yeah.
You by the end of Inquisition, you are not threatened by Corypheus. And that sucks, because it was a really awesome setup and it just fell flat. So like, I at this point, I think the elusive man's gonna go on. Maybe it's the Reapers. It's just like, I know Corypheus is last, so like, I can't defend it, because like, it was going to be cool, and then it just pooped the bed. So like, I'm a bad lawyer, I know.
No, well, we both are. Once you hear what I have to say about the Reapers, we both are.
Okay.
So I can sort of give the statement for Mass Effect. Remind me to come back to Corypheus, because I fucking love Corypheus in many ways.
Okay.
So on Mass Effect, and in particular on the Reapers, since I talked about the elusive man extensively already, I have thought about the Reapers for a long time, Katie. Back in my blogger days, I wrote several long, you know, 2,000, 3,000 word essays on the Reaper. I am working on a video, which don't even expect me to post videos on the Exalted. If I ever get it done, it's probably going to be like an hour long if I can actually finish it and not hate it. But it's extensively involves sort of the thematic aspects of the Reaper. Like, I've spent a long fucking time thinking about these cockroach robot monster things. And they are brilliant in a lot of ways. They are probably the closest thing to Cthulhu that we've had in modern gaming or in modern storytelling. They are meant to be that sort of the oldest monster at the end of the universe sort of motif. And mm-hmm. I think if you just judge them aesthetically and thematically based on how they are in Mass Effect 1, which it's really just Sovereign in 1, that's kind of my favorite version of them. And even though I think they make mm-hmm. some missteps with how they handle the Reapers in 1, it's pretty damn good. By the time you get to Mass Effect 3 and they're trying to expand out what the Reapers are and get a much closer look at the Reapers, and of course at the very end, when they try and explain the Reapers, and then in the DLC they try to explain the origins of the Reapers further, mm-hmm. I think they continue to falter. It's not that it's all bad. Some of the stuff with the Leviathan is interesting, but then it really is, okay, well, the Leviathans are kind of interesting as far as their origin, But what makes the Leviathan interesting kind of makes the Reapers not.
Yeah.
The Reapers as a cosmic level event, as an entity or a force that annihilates organics the way that white blood cells annihilate germs, or the way that like a heat bubble or a black hole or a planet or a star going supernova, like, that's a terrifying idea. The idea that they're not even disregarding us, they are a form of automation. They are something that doesn't even cognize us, to be quite honest. Like, they don't even notice us. This is just what happens. And the guy, that's a fucking terrifying idea. And I love that idea so much that by the time we're talking to a fucking hologram, Star Child, and all this other crap, I don't want to do the Mass Effect 3 ending sucks rant anymore, because I've kind of just accepted it. And I've also accepted the fact that it is interesting in its own way. The Catalyst AI, the Leviathan, the origins that we finally get to understand where the Reapers came from, that actually is interesting. And it actually is kind of good writing in its own way. I just don't think it's as good as the sort of Lovecraftian cosmicism sci-fi Cthulhu concept that they originally envisioned. I don't know if that was a Drew Karpyshyn versus Mac Walters kind of dichotomy or what it was, but I liked the conceptualization of the Reapers originally so much more as compared to what they finally ended up on. So it's kind of like a split answer for how I would rank them on three. Ultimately, I feel like they have to be knocked down a couple pegs. I feel like they could have been the ultimate evil, the ultimate bad guy, the ultimate antagonist if they had found a way to continue along the path of Lovecraftian horror and cosmicism that they'd started in Mass Effect 1. But since they don't do that, sort of several demerits for the Reapers.
Mm-hmm.
The Elusive Man, I mean, everything that I said in 2, I do think the Elusive Man gets knocked down a little bit in 3 because he mainly just becomes like an indoctrinated crazy person.
Yeah.
In 3, and he loses a lot of the coolness. You know, he's going crazy. He's got Reaper tech inside. The Reapers basically take over the Elusive Man, right? And I would have liked to have seen a version where the Elusive Man sort of stays true to himself, even though he's a bastard at his heart anyway, and he doesn't essentially get taken over by the Reapers, which seems antithetical to who he is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the Elusive Man still very good in many ways, but not as good as he was in 2.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Because I feel like in 2, my memory of it is that he was like this like imposing figure. And then again, 3, he was just like, Shepherd! Blah, 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 blah. He's just like looking nuts. Yeah. So he's a crazy man. So, I in this ranking, I would put Corypheus last. So who would you, I guess... I almost want to, the Reapers were just so built up, even though that built up ended up being disappointing, that I almost want to put them through, but like, I don't know, who's better, Elusive Man or Reaper? I almost want to say the Reapers, but it's close for me. I don't know, do you? Because yeah, in my mind, it's just the Elusive Man was crazy guy, and the Reapers actually... I just didn't feel like the Elusive Man was as an antagonist as the Reapers are, even though like, I should also say I did not actually play the Leviathan DLC, and maybe that's hurting me a little bit here because I don't actually know that side of the story.
I mean, at least for the sake of Mass Effect 3, the DLC doesn't, like I said, it doesn't make the story slightly worse. It's interesting. I just don't think it's as good as what they could have done. And that's kind of an unfair judgment on my part to sort of prefer this hypothetical thing that, like, it's not like I could have written it. You know what I mean? It's hard to write that shit. It's hard to write a monster and a villain that's continually mysterious, but that you also kind of learn more about. Like, it's fucking hard. That's why they went a different direction, I think. But I get I kind of think we have to split the Elusive Man into 2, right? There's ME2 Elusive Man and ME3 Elusive Man. We've already put ME2 Elusive Man, right? Sort of as the winner.
Yeah.
I think we just take the Reapers from Mass Effect 3.
You're right. See.
And then we put the best version of the Elusive Man up against them in the finals.
Yeah, so then Well, then, like, just looking at the... Okay, so if we're putting the Reapers through, then it's Loghain, the Elusive Man, and the Reapers. And I kind of want to say, like, not even without talking about it, I would put the Elusive Man at the top.
Okay. Well, we could do that, but then we could also see, okay, who's... Then we'll come up with an official number two ranking.
Okay. So, okay, hold on. Let's... okay, Corypheus is number three. Reapers is one. Okay, so well, do you agree? Would you put the Elusive Man over? I think the Elusive Man versus ME3 Reapers, Elusive Man would, or ME2 Elusive Man would win. But do you agree that he would win over Loghain?
Okay, interesting. Yeah. Fucking hell, this is very interesting. What is Loghain after? What is Loghain's aim in Dragon Age Origins?
Honestly, the fantasy version of what the Elusive Man is after. He wants to keep his country safe. That's what he's after. You could argue that he's actually after more power or whatever, but I think at the core of it, he just wants to keep Ferelden, the Ferelden that he knew, the Ferelden of his past, Ferelden that is stable and whole and like can stand by itself.
He sold slaves. Those were elves, right?
They were elves, yeah. There are Ferelden citizens, and it also kind of doesn't make that much sense because he's actually pro-elven in the books, but we're not counting that, so we're just going to throw that over there. He did sell the alienage that were apparently... I think he said like if the Civil War happened, they would have been the first to die, so they were the first to get sold or something like that. Yeah, I mean... He's a bad guy. What am I?
I mean, you're right, and that's what I was going for, which is like, is you know, because ultimately, you know, the Elusive Man is a supremacist. He really believes that humanity should be above all the other races. That's why he started Cerberus. So also very sort of ugh on that side of it as well. I'm really trying to get a feel now for like which one of them has, because as much as I like the idea of talking about them from a standpoint of, is there a sympathetic angle to them? Now I'm really trying to see, like, which one of them had the more terrifying aim?
I think it was the Elusive Man.
I think you're right. I think that that's accurate.
All right. So, yeah, we'll put Elusive Man at the top then. He wins. Congrats. We didn't even talk about the Reapers, but I think we kind of did.
I mean, the Reapers actually have the most terrifying aim out of everyone, because it's basically the elimination of... Again, they are... Conceptually, if you take their sort of origin, the initial idea of the Reapers, I think would have won going away, in my opinion, because they're the essential prototypical idea of a monster or a villain within a story. But
the problem is, though, is they had the same thing with Corypheus, where they shat the bed at the
that's
end.
It. That's exactly it. So that's why they don't win. But I do want to say, like, if they had kept that concept purer or more focused, it would have won.
So then I have Elusive Man as one, Loghain as number two, Reapers as three? Or no, Loghain, Reapers over Loghain.
No, I say Loghain over Reapers.
Okay, so Loghain as number two, Reapers as three.
That makes sense to me. And then does that mean, where does Corypheus go?
Corypheus, well, tied for, I guess, number four, because we didn't actually rank them next. It would be Meredith... because this is boop. Okay, so
do we face off twos for each of the people that didn't advance?
We could quickly, which that doesn't include Corypheus even. That would be the Elusive Man from Mass Effect 3, the Aerishock, and Saren.
Oh, that's actually a cool face off right there.
I would say Elusive Man gets knocked off for a number as third place there. Because the Aerishock and Saren are just so much better.
I completely agree, but Saren versus Aerishock is really cool.
Yeah.
I would just say, look, based on what I said about how the Aerishock makes you doubt what you think you know, like, Saren kind of makes an argument, but, like, Saren is clearly
troubled.
Yeah,
I never bought it.
Yeah, like, Saren is just, he's a troubled Spectre agent who went too far. And, like, I don't think he's nearly as compelling as the Aerishock is.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So that would be Air Shock 4, Saren 5, Elusive Man.
6?
6, yeah.
And then all the last place people.
Well, then it's the Geth, Corypheus, and Meredith. I would say Geth would be the last of those.
I would say Corypheus would be the first and Meredith in the middle.
Yeah, because Meredith kind of has the opposite problem as Corypheus, because she's kind of like nobody, and then she has like a, whoa, what the fuck's going on, where Corypheus is the opposite. So yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Corypheus is a more compelling. Okay, so yeah, so then Corypheus number...
Just yes. Say this about Corypheus, because I love fucking Corypheus. The moment that you talked about, when he walks through the flames, when he first drops in, when he has some of the best fucking dialogue in the entire series.
Yeah.
I have seen the throne of the gods and it was empty. You know, you meddle with forces beyond your ken. I'm like, holy, what did he say? Kin? Ken? I had to Google Ken to be like, what is how many people say shit like meddle with forces beyond your ken? It's not like people say that shit in regular life.
But here's the thing. He's from like a billion years ago. Of course he's going to talk like a doofus. Like,
that's what's so good about it. I'm like, this is fucking, I don't know if it was Weeks or Gator, whoever actually wrote that exact dialogue, but holy fucking shit, that was good. Like that is, I think it's the best aesthetic moment in the entire Dragon Age series.
Yeah.
Just and like, as he's far as like cool
and like
shit.
He's so much bigger than you. He's just like holding you by your hand. Yes. And like even a Qunari, you look like a little rag doll.
It's fucking insane. And you're right. It is downhill from there. That Corypheus is never cooler than in that moment. But I would also argue that purely aesthetically, I don't think anything is ever as cool as that moment in Dragon Age. That might be the coolest shit. Like if there was a trailer for the entire Dragon Age series, like that's a moment that has to be in there because it's so fucking badass.
Mm-hmm.
I love, you basically said it earlier, very similar to the Reapers, the concept of Corypheus and what he was actually alluding to and shit that, like, you know, referencing, you know, the Golden City in that way and sort of like the lore that had kind of been left in the background, and all of a sudden he's bringing it up in this very real way. You're like, oh shit, that counts now? Like, that's, we're talking about that now, up front and center, like... Yeah, it was kind of downhill from that moment. I just want to say, like, at that introduction point, it was like peak. It was also peak villainy in many ways.
So then the last thing we have to clear up then is the Archdemon versus the Collectors.
Oh, are those the bottom ranks?
Yeah. I'm not even going to argue, Kat. I've already written them down as number 12. but
yeah, I'll put the Collectors down below the Archdemon, honestly.
Okay. Okay, so then.
One second. I mean, I'm not necessarily going to change the ranking, we should at least mention this. The Collectors were the Protheans. I mean, that is kind of cool. Like that was a great twist at the time. Obviously, you know, the fact that I'm just bringing it up now kind of shows that over time, everyone just kind of went like, well, yeah, I guess the Collectors were the Protheans. It's not like it didn't have the lasting impact, but in that moment, the idea that, but see, even that. Okay, the Collectors are actually the Protheans. Does that make the Collectors scary, or does that make the fucking Reaper scary?
That makes the Reaper scary.
That's exactly it. So it's actually more of a credit to the Reapers than it is to the Collectors themselves. So anyway, just wanted to mention that.
So then the final ranking at the bottom is the Ket, the Collectors, the Archdemon, the Geth, Meredith, Corypheus, the Elusive Man from Mass Effect 3, Saren, the Arishok, the Reapers from specifically Mass Effect 3, Loghain, and then Mass Effect 2 Elusive Man. I almost said Alluvian Man for some reason.
Oh, fuck, Alluvian Man. That's
surprise! Solus is number one all along! Fucking dorks!
Solus Alluvian Man? You just invented a new villain.
Oh god, it's just like him in front of a breach with like a glass of wine or something instead of a cigarette.
How fucking amazing would it be if some fucking dork on Reddit made like another fake E3 leak instead of Salos, it's the Alluvian Man?
they wanna take the hype of Mass Effect 2 and they're just gonna make it into Dragon Age. It's gonna be Mass Effect 2 with dragons. You know, that's what we'll have. Oh Jesus. Well, with that, so as much as I love the Dragon Age series, that means Mass Effect has won the best antagonist and the best protagonist. But I can't say I disagree, though, even though I like Dragon Age more.
What was the top five again?
The top five was Elusive Man, Loghain, Reapers, Aerosshock, Saren. So two out of the five were Dragon Age.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I really, really like Loghain, though. And I do think Loghain and the Elusive Man were neck and neck, so.
And I think Corypheus would have been higher did he not just become, you know, a little baby boy at the end of the game.
I mean, the real sad part is that the number one could have been and should have been like the Reaper, the Reapers and Corypheus. That's kind of the sad thing, is that like the two best villains in each of the franchises kind of slipped up at the end.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah.
But I like this list, honestly. When you read through the whole list, I'm like, that sounds about right.
I'm not mad at it, you know? There were some things when we did the ranking of the companions where I'm like, well, we had differing opinions, and so Zevran became much lower than whatever, and I don't know. But this I would, probably on my own, I might rank it like this, you know?
This is the classic split the veil of moderation. Also, of course, folks, comment down below if you're on YouTube, or tweet us or do something to let us know how you would rank them. I'd be interested to see how people would do it.
Tell us why you think the cat actually deserved to be higher. Not
please.
No. Although seriously, if you think the cat should be higher, I want to hear your argument, because I just don't know what it is. I don't mean that in like a passive aggressive way. I like legitimately don't know.
Yeah.
But with that, we should probably get going. So my God, I almost called you Loghain. What did I almost call you Loghain? Well, Loghain, where can they find you?
Somewhere in Denerim, or I might be dead. I don't know.
Where can they find you, Jordan?
They can find me on YouTube, which is like Denerim, and they can find me no longer on Twitter, because that's like being dead. Katie, where can folks find you?
Does that mean I'm Corypheus? Wait, no, am I Saren? Am I Saren? Well, you can find me. No, you can. I don't know. Saren, what does Saren sound like? Nothing I can like make with my mouth. Yeah. Yeah, I can't make a computerized gravelly noise. Anyway, you can find me on YouTube as Gildrathon, Twitter as Gildrathon, and everywhere else I'm hiding. So with that, everybody, Dara Sherlock.